What really gets my dick hard is...
Hey, this is Michael Wagner, and you're listening to Metal Up Your Podcast.
Welcome to Metal Up Your Podcast. I'm Ethan Luck.
And I'm Clint Wells.
And this is episode 66. And this week we were getting to disc two of Garage Inc. We've already done disc one. And yeah, there are some repeat songs in here because we've done Garage Days. But we got to burn this one down.
Yeah, we'll burn it down. We have done an episode on Garage Days we revisited, so we won't do a track by track on those. But we're going to get into all the B-sides, all the fun covers, the Motorhead stuff, and all that stuff, just like we always do. If you don't know who we are, if you're joining us for the first time somehow, maybe your best friend told you about us just yesterday morning. Aww. Over a shared cup of coffee. I don't know.
That's so nice of them.
Yeah. They're a good friend.
That's a great friend.
I hope you tell them what a good friend they are.
I'd like to meet that friend.
We're an All Metallica podcast. Ethan and I are two touring musicians who take some time out of our busy schedules every week to talk about our favorite metal band, the mighty Metallica. I just got in today from a gig in Miami. You've been making a record all week.
Yeah, I was in the studio with our friend Paul Moak.
Paul?
Working on a record for this girl named Anna Rose. So I got to play guitar all week. And the week before that, I was out on the road with Bayside. Not Bayside, sorry. Jack from Bayside.
Yeah.
Good friend of ours. And we did some solo shows together. Had some fans show up to some shows.
Yeah, let's talk about who all came out.
We had Dina, of course.
Dina Lindemann. Dina Lindemann, Darth
Leviosa. Yeah, and then... we had Ben. I'm blanking on Ben's last name right now. He's going to kill me. I'm going to look it up as
he's
fast as
kill
I can.
You.
He's going to come to Nashville and he's going to assassinate me.
Hey, man, really great to meet you. Huge fan of the podcast. Listen, I would love a shout out on the show. Only caveat I can offer, and I say this with utmost humility, if you get my last name wrong, I'm going to kill you.
Yeah, you're going to die.
So,
well, good thing I just remembered it. It's Ben Jenkins.
Okay.
But Ben, actually, I was kind of stoked. He was the first one to actually fulfill the drink purchase for me.
Very cool.
Yeah, I was up at the bar by myself grabbing a drink. This was in Chicago. And he walked up and, hey, this one's on me. I was like, you're the first.
Very cool.
Yeah, pretty awesome. Then Alex Finney came to Champaign, Illinois.
Fun.
So thank you guys for coming to those shows. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you liked my tunes.
We'll periodically mention our tour dates. And if anyone's welcome to come to shows, we can always comp tickets. And we love meeting everyone and saying hi and saying thank you. I had a similar deal. A lot of people bought me drinks, and I even bought some of our fans drinks. Just more ways to say thanks.
Yeah, I didn't do that.
Yeah.
I was just cashing in.
So that's what we do. We're two musicians. We make records. We tour. We write our own shit. By the way, new Lunar Satan track at the end of this episode.
Oh, get
ready
for
it. Set the witch on fire again. So we have our hands on all sorts of fun, crazy projects. So,
oh, yeah.
But the podcast is all based around Metallica. We cover their records, their gear, band members. This is all things that you would talk about with your other nerdy metal friends.
Exactly.
About Metallica.
You guys are now a fly on the wall.
Now, we do this thing called an iTunes contest where we give away gifts every month. Go leave us a positive review on iTunes. It only takes a second. Helps us out a lot. We're going to give you free stuff. For the month of March, just like we did in February, we're giving away 10 free downloads of our patron-exclusive Metallica Covers EP, Cover Our World Black and Volume 1. We're going to draw those 10 names at the end of this month. And you also get any new Lunar Satan track. The record will be written by the summer. There's two tracks now. You're going to get those tracks too.
That's pretty generous.
I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah, very.
And even if you don't want the free shit, go leave the review. It just takes a second. It's real helpful.
It's really easy. Yeah.
We'll talk about Patreon later.
Yeah.
You'll hear from us. But we did get some new patrons.
We did. And also, before we get to that, we're on the socials, as you know. We're on Instagram, we're on Twitter, we're on Facebook.
Oh, you know what
stuff.
We're on now? I got an email from Simplecast. Apparently, they put us on Spotify.
Yeah, I looked into it, I don't know, 3 or 4 weeks ago, and there was a way to submit it. And I was kind of just in the middle of doing other shit, and so I was like, I'll do this later. And then all of a sudden, Clint emailed me the other day, like, hey, I guess we're on Spotify.
Well, because the hosting company that we do our podcast through, I think they pushed it to Spotify anyway.
Right, yeah.
I don't do Spotify. I could not give a fuck about Spotify, but apparently it's there if you want to listen to it.
Yeah, if that's a way for you to listen to music and you want to also check out our podcast, there you can now. So, yay.
Let's give it up for...
Let's
give it up for the music platform putting musicians out of work
and out of house. Musicians out of work for the last 5 years. Yeah. Speaking of that, I won't go on too much of a tangent here, but Jack and I, when we were doing our little solo tour, we're talking about Spotify and how little they pay per stream and all that stuff. I believe it's 0.00023 cents.
Oh, great.
Per stream. And so I started going to Spotify, and on there you can look up, let's say the band's top five songs, and it shows how many streams it has. Mm-hmm. So I looked up Metallica, of course. Right. I'm like, what are they making on Spotify? One of the biggest bands in the world. Enter Sandman's their most streamed song, and it was something crazy like 680 million streams.
Okay.
That only makes them about 13 grand.
Jesus
Christ.
Isn't
that crazy? Now, $13,000 is a lot of money for a lot of people, but that's, I mean, if you're...
Not for James Hetfield.
Let's say like a person like me randomly got some song in some movie or something, and I got 680 million streams of just one song of the 20 I have on Spotify. I would get 13 grand, great, but I mean, that's not a living
wage. Let's put it this way. Let's say we're go back with me in time, not even that far. Go back with me just to when MP3s hit the scene, right? Now, 600 million plays on Spotify. We don't know. Those probably aren't all unique spins.
Sure.
There's multiple listens there. Let's just be conservative and say the true number of unique listens is 300 million instead of six, right? If you were to buy that song off goddamn iTunes for $1, do the math with me now, folks. That's $300 million.
Quite a bit.
That's a bit different than $13,000.
Yeah. Or God, what if only 100,000 people are actually listening to it? I mean, that's still 100 grand if you each person bought that song one time.
So let's get real.
And I don't have a lot of listens on Spotify. I have, like, my biggest song on there is maybe 1,200 streams. But that, let's do the math real quick. We have a calculator right here. The official Metal Up Your Podcast calculator.
Let's just get into it, yeah.
So I think it's about 1,200 streams times 0.00023. That song made me
less than
a dollar.
Less than a dollar.
27 cents I got off of 1,200 streams.
Wow, man.
It's depressing.
What a miracle.
I think when I go on to my, I use DistroKid to get my music out there. When I go on there and see what I've in total made on Spotify since I've been on it for 4 years, I guess. I think I've total made about $56.
Wow. Living the fucking scream.
Yeah, man.
Well, so anyway, we're on that evil fucking demon platform now. You want to go listen?
Well, the good news is it doesn't matter if you listen to it on there or not. We don't get paid anything either way.
Yeah, yeah. The only really way that we do sort of generate any type of revenue to put right back in the show is through the super duper generous donations of our patrons.
Exactly. Speaking of, we got some new ones this week.
Yeah, Brandon Horton, Craig Elba, Torben Ulrich, which obviously that's probably not the Torben Ulrich.
How do you know this? I have so much money. I live in the Bay Area next to Lars. And
son Lars, he gives me a stipend.
I decided to take my flying carpet over to the Patreon headquarters and give them cash.
He's given me the stipend since Ride the Lightning.
I love the cover EP.
And then also Rob Cook. So awesome. We want to just say super duper thank you to you dudes. That's the second time I've said super duper.
What super
the
fuck is duper?
That's like a dad in me coming out. Super duper.
I think it's super duper that we're doing this right now.
Thanks to you. So, and we have a whole page on our Patreon page where we do special shit with them. We actually have confirmed that Jim Florentine is going to be on the show next week.
Next week. If you know who Jim Florentine is, he is one of the hosts of That Metal Show.
Amongst many other things, yeah. Crank Anchors. He's got a book out. He does stand up. Super cool cat. Super funny dude. He's coming on the show. One of the things we do over at Patreon is we allow our patrons to ask our guests questions. So they were able to ask Michael Alago questions, able to ask Michael Wagner questions. We're working on getting Ray Burton on the show. Patrons are going to be able to ask Ray Burton questions. Yep. So that's just another reason to go to patreon.com, get on that ride. Anyway, you'll hear about it later.
Yeah.
Like we said, the new Lunar Satan track's coming up. You're going to dig that. Let's finally, good God, get into some fucking emails.
Okay, our first email is from
Adriel.
Adriel, that's an interesting name.
That's cool.
Yeah, very cool. Adriel Vinson. Hey, I've written in once before, but I just want to say thanks because I've been going through a lot lately, and it's super duper great. I added that. Super duper great to forget it all and just listen to you guys talk about Metallica. Plus, this podcast is also hilarious. Again, thank you. Well, Adriel, you are welcome. We're sorry you're going through some hard stuff, but we're glad we could give you maybe a smile or two in your face.
Yeah, I mean, just in general, I mean, I don't know what it is, but I think Ethan and I would unite in saying hang in there. And
yeah.
you know, it'll get better. And in the meantime, you can listen to us talk about boners. Last week was definitely like the boner episode.
It was definitely the boner episode. Yeah, we may have to do a boner revisited.
All right, our next email is from our new friend of the show, new friend and patron, Danny Santana.
He says,
hey guys, well, I finally did it. I'm all caught up. 74 episodes in 20 days. Jeez. Holy shit. I hope the divorce is going well.
Yeah, if you need a lawyer, I know some.
I hope the job hunt and the divorce is going well. Anyway, that's a joke. He says, it was super cool, super duper cool.
Yeah, by the way, always add duper if someone says super.
Super cool to hear your podcast grow. I'm glad to have been on the ride, if only recently. This is going to be a long-ass email. If my previous emails were Black Album in length, this email would definitely be on And Justice for All. Since I've listened to every episode and have heard your thoughts, I thought I'd catch you up on my thoughts all at once. So strap in, gentlemen. Here are my thoughts on every single episode. Just kidding about every episode, but here are some thoughts. And I'm not going to read every single one of them, but I am going to read some because I like this dude's opinion on shit. He says, Lady Gaga and Metallica, super fucking cool. I even held out some hope that she would make a surprise appearance at the stadium show I went to and fly in on a zip line or something. I know most fans would shit on that idea. I love Lady Gaga.
I think it'd be awesome.
I thought their collaboration on Moth was really cool. And
if she flew in on a wire, like dressed as a moth.
Oh, I'd love it.
Going towards flames and then came down. It's like, holy shit, it's Gaga. And then James's mic didn't work again.
She's just wearing a dress made out of moths.
Yeah.
All right. He says, on St. Anger, he says, well, it sucks. I like parts of it, but it's terrible. I'd rather it be nothing but Clint Wells renditions. Well, that's very flattering. He's, of course, referring to my cover of The Unnamed Feeling, which you can get on the Cover Hour Blackened EP.
Yeah.
He says, Jason or Cliff? I love Cliff, as we all do, but Jason's backup vocals were just so killer, I might have to lean Jason. A quick story relating to Cliff. I was able to get about a person away from the rail at the Pasadena show last summer. Right before Metallica went on, Ray Burton made his way to backstage, I'm assuming, and walked right past us. I extended my hand over the rail, and someone he was with pointed me out, and so he walked over to me and shook my hand. I told him we loved Cliff, and he continued on his way. Super cool moment for me. That is very cool.
That's awesome.
He says, Paul Moak. He says, Paul? Yes, more Paul, please. Love his insight and his genuine love for Metallica and the podcast. And in general, your guests have been awesome. Sign me up if you ever need to fill a slot with a fan. Cool. Well,
awesome.
We want to have Paul on. I mean, Paul is, as we've said before, is like, he's not even a guest. He's a host.
He's one of the co-hosts, yeah.
And he'll be on. We're going to do a Rick Rubin episode at some point, and we'll have Paul on to talk about Rick Rubin. And
that'll be like a 10-minute episode.
I think we've been talking about doing this for a year, but we do want to at some point take phone calls from fans.
Yeah, or call you, something like that, where basically you can be a guest on the show.
One show every month or two, we want to be like fan call-in.
Yeah.
However, and so we're still trying to fucking work that out.
It would be super duper.
It would be super duper if we could work it out. Okay, he's got a few more things he says here. He says his top 5 underappreciated Metallica songs. Number 5, 2x4. Number 4, All Nightmare Long. 3, Wasting My Hate. 2, The Struggle Within. Number 1, Trapped Under Ice. He says, played live only 21 times, and I was lucky enough to get it in Anaheim in 2009. That's cool.
That's awesome.
I know our friend Stephanie will dig that. That's her favorite song. Let's see. His favorite Metallica albums. Number 10, St. Anger. Number 9, Reload. He says, I'm sorry, Clint. I do love Bad Seed and Prince Charming, though. Two outliers on that record, by the way. He likes the two outliers. Number 8, Load. 7, Death Magnetic. 6, Hardwired to Self-Destruct. 5, Metallica. He went with calling it Metallica rather than TBA. Like, that's a move.
It's self-titled, and it's called Metallica.
I mean, he's technically correct, but
he is.
That's a different flavor.
It is, yeah.
Number 4, Kill 'Em All. 3, Ride the Lightning. 2, Puppets. 1, Injustice for All.
His
very
list
cool.
is not far off from what mine was.
He says, P.S., since we all love lists, how about a top 5 Metallica guitar harmonies?
Ooh.
He says, here are mine. Spit Out the Bone, Fight Fire with Fire, Sanitarium, Blackened, and Orion. Metal up your podcast asses and also zone it.
Oh, we're zoning it hard today.
I'd have to put My Friend of Misery in there, man.
That's a great one.
Yeah.
I love that one. Right after the good little...
Do you think they use a harmonizer pedal, or do you think they actually double-tracked it?
I bet they tracked that.
They double-tracked it.
I'd imagine so, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a great list, and that's a good list to think about.
Maybe we'll put an actual list together. I would have to think about it and listen.
I'd have to really dive in, because there's probably things, you know, that are harmonized in lead parts that I'm forgetting about, you know.
You know what I'd have to do? Like, I haven't done it every fucking day for over a year, is listen to Metallica.
Oh, shoot. I should probably listen to Metallica.
Hey, Danny, thanks for the patron support. Thanks for the email. We're glad you're on the ride.
Heck yeah.
Appreciate you, dude.
Next email is from Andrew Belly. Hey, Ethan and Clint. Just want to say thanks so much for reading out my email. It really made my day. I was on a long drive from work through the country, Victoria, Australia, and there was literally no one on the road. And then my name came out of the speakers. Absolute spin out. You had a spin out?
I did a donut in Melbourne.
I think what a spin out means is he's real excited that we said his name. Cheers, mate.
Crocodile Dundee.
Absolute spin out. So thank you so much. It's great to know that you guys take time to read people's emails, and just reinforces what a great podcast this and what legend. What? Let me do that in an Australian accent. It just reinforces what a great podcast this is and what legends you guys are. That's all right?
All right, yeah.
Is that good, Andrew? Again, keep up the great work. Andrew from Melbourne, New Jersey. His name's Andrew Wallaby. I really hope that's real.
No,
it's not.
I think it's Belly.
What a dingo. Melbourne is my favorite city in Australia, by the way. ACDC Lane, there's a great bar there called Cherry Bar. It's awesome. I think we talked about that, and mentioned that place called Lord of the Fries.
Yeah, in Australia. Killer McDonald's over there.
Great. They call it Macca's.
Really?
Yeah, Macca's. And then I think I told you before, Burger King over there is Hungry Jack's.
It's like McDowell's.
McDowell's, yeah.
They got the Golden Arches. We got the Golden Arcs.
They got the Big Mac. We got the Big Mick.
Let's hear that. Let's have a little more Coming to America.
More Coming to America.
Yeah, sure.
Look, me and the McDonald's people, we got this little misunderstanding. See, they're McDonald's. I'm McDowell's. Huh? They got the Golden Arches. Mine is the Golden Arcs. Now, see, they got the Big Mac. I got the Big Mick. We both got two all-beef patties, special sauce, lettuce, cheese, pickles, and onions. But they use a sesame seed bun. My buns have no seeds.
Amazing. All right, well, thanks, Andrew, for the email.
You did not meet Martin Luther King.
You know what I mean, Martin Luther King?
No, I met him. I was walking. And he hit me right in my chest.
God, what a good movie.
Okay.
That boy's good.
Good, terrible. Sexual chocolate.
Sexual chocolate. Randy Watson.
I believe children are the future.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Sexual chocolate.
It's so good. I think it's on Netflix right now. I got to rewatch that soon.
Oh, God. All right. Nick Roller, our rock and roll lawyer, says, I was also curious about your guys' thoughts on separating person from the art, so I'm glad a new brother asked. He says, for me, it's not the politics so much until it gets unbearable. I can agree to disagree with just about everyone. A guy like Ted Nugent, though, is harder because he's crossed the line from musician to pundit, and he's a kind of belligerent asshole about his views. To me, that's the dividing line. Mustaine can be annoying, whiny, and straight-up belligerent, but he remains first and foremost a musician, not a talking head. Those are good points. I mean, dude, if Stranglehold comes on the radio, I'm fucking listening to it.
Yeah,
that's
for sure.
One of the most badass songs ever written.
Yeah, it really is.
David St. Holmes' vocals great on it. It's a fucking amazing solo.
If Surviving Nugent's on TV, I'm going to watch that shit.
I've never seen it. I've heard about it.
I watched an episode or two. It's just a bunch of contestants on his
and
ranch.
He tries to, like, kill him. Does he try to kill him?
He tries to kill him. No, it's them, like, surviving, like, basically, like... They
like
have these missions
shit.
Or whatever, outdoorsy stuff, and he shoots a girl with, like, one of those, it's like a net gun that, like, goes around the person or whatever. He, like, shows up in a helicopter one day, is, like, shooting paintballs at people, and...
I think he's pretty funny, but he is, when it comes to politics, he's a straight-up douchebag. So
yeah, he is, yeah.
He says, where I struggle more is to separate an artist's view on their art or other people's art. See, and this gets squirrely for me, because he goes into Kiss territory.
Ooh.
He says, enter prime example Gene, and everyone knows what a fucking massive Kiss guy I am.
Yeah.
Enter prime example Gene Simmons, and to a lesser degree, Paul Stanley. The constant comments about rock music being dead, no one understands the biz like Gene, really rubbed me the wrong way. What really did it for me was when they started talking about replacing themselves and letting Kiss continue. To me, that says Paul and Gene could give a fuck about their fans or even their legacy and just want to check. I can't even listen to a Kiss record anymore without being irritated and feeling that somewhere... Gene Simmons is treating someone like a total contemptuous asshole, which sucks, because like many kids, Kiss was once upon a time bigger than life. Now it's just a huge prick, a smaller prick, and the slew of people they fucked over and shit on to get where they are. Thanks, Nick. Well,
All right.
I'm not sure that's definitely not a generous assessment. I'm not sure it's all that accurate either.
I wouldn't call it generous.
You know, one thing's I've, and by the way, let me say this, no one can eviscerate Kiss like a Kiss fan.
Right.
So, like, people tried to make fun of me for liking Kiss before. I'm like, dude, it ain't gonna work. We fucking eviscerate Kiss.
Yeah.
Now, I appreciate Gene's honesty about the business. I don't think he claims to be the know-it-all, but I think him and Paul and their manager, I'm spacing on his name, Bill Aquine, had some pretty strong acumen about how to market that band. I mean, I would say other than the Beatles, they're the most marketable band in the world.
I agree.
What other band has pinball machines and kites and lunchboxes and
kites?
They have Kiss everything.
They have Kiss everything. Yeah. Hey, I want to get a new couch for my living room. Do you think they make a Kiss couch?
Dude, they made a fucking Kiss coffin that Dimebag Darrell is buried in.
Yep. It's true.
And I think that they play it all up. It's fucking show business, dude.
That's more show business than it is like true rock and roll.
Well, and here's the deal. Most people care about money.
Sure.
They're not giving their music away for free. Well, now we're being fucking forced to.
Right.
But they're trying to sell a product, dude. And it's show business.
Mm-hmm.
So to pretend that like Metallica doesn't also do that, I think isn't true.
I mean, there's a Metallica blanket right next to you.
I'm wearing a Metallica. I've got the new Garage Days Revisited hoodie that I'm wearing right now. It's super bitchin'. I recommend it to any of you out there. But here's the deal.
Like, it looks super duper.
Kiss puts on one of the greatest shows in the world. That's for their fans. In an era when people were coming out wearing a fucking t-shirt and shoegazing the whole time, they were coming out and putting on the biggest show they could fucking imagine.
Yeah, they did.
And they changed the face of rock and roll because of it.
Yep, that's 100% true.
Now, are they unlikable douchebags sometimes? Yes. Go read their books. It's not fun. It's funny.
Yeah.
But you know, I think they get slagged a little more than they deserve. Nick, I appreciate your opinion for sure. You know, he knows I respect his opinion.
Yeah, sustained.
But I would maybe push back a little bit on that. But as usual, as always, thanks for writing in and giving us your thoughts.
Next email is from Cyrus. No last name, just plain old Cyrus. Cyrus says, hey guys, the last episode was great. You guys kept apologizing for going off on tangents, but I got to say, it was the funniest hour and a half of my whole week. I was listening to it at work and almost fell out of my chair about 3 or 4 times. My boss kept asking why I was cackling. Anyways, great show.
Cackling.
Cackling, sorry.
I thought a witch.
I thought it was a double I.
Cacking.
Anyways, great show. Loved it. Keep up the great work. I'm a history major, so I love the year by year history that you're going through. Love it. Thanks again, guy. Guy.
Just, that's probably my typo.
Just
thanks
one
again,
of
guys.
Us. That's Cyrus from Durango, Colorado. Well, thanks, Cyrus. That's awesome, and I'm glad you didn't get fined or fired or written up at work.
And we're gonna when we do the year in the life of Metallica, that's just going to continue to ramp up.
Because yeah. Next will be 83.
83, Kill 'Em All and all that. So, all right. Thanks, dude. Joey Swords. He says, first off, Spit Out the Boner. Just incredible. And don't forget their Grammy Award-winning cover of Boner in the Jar. He says, as far as the talk about separating the art from the artist within metal music, it made me think of Tim Lembesis of As I Lay Dying. He says, you probably already know the story, which I did, but he went to prison a few years ago for trying to hire a hitman who was an undercover cop to kill his wife. Obviously horrendous, but even more surprising since As I Lay Dying was considered a Christian band. He says, personally, I still listen to the music without a problem. It was a big part of growing up for me, and I enjoy it for what it is. He's out of jail now, though, and I think I would have to draw the line at going to see him live if he starts a new project. I love the old songs, but I can't imagine feeling comfortable watching him in person now and financially supporting him. Like you said, let's hope no one has a reason to hashtag me too, the Met Boys. That would be a sad, sad day. Anyway, good night and pleasant boners.
Thank you.
Yeah, dude. I remember I was doing a show in Hartford, Connecticut with Griffin House. And we were doing this club that was like a small club where we were playing, but it was connected to a big-ass club.
Where is that at?
Hartford, Connecticut.
Hartford, okay.
Dude, this was the club where we loaded in for soundcheck. And when we went out like after soundcheck to go find food, the promoter goes, hey, whatever you do, he's like, go look for food, it's fine. Whatever you do, when you go out of the venue, do not go left.
Oh, yeah, Hartford's no joke.
He's like, don't go anywhere left. I'm telling you, it's extremely dangerous.
Yeah.
He goes, but you can go right, and there's like food a few blocks away. And I'm going, is there like a big moat or something? Like,
a bunch of alligators.
Right's not that far from left when you walk out of the goddamn club.
No, dude, the Hartford is it's a rough area.
Oh, we didn't eat. Yeah. Dude, I was scared to death. It was fucking creepy. Like, so anyway. We go into like, we kind of like mosey into that other club because they're doing a sound check and it was some metal band. and we look on the marquee, it's As I Lay Dying.
Okay.
I'd never heard of them.
Yeah.
And then after the show, we're like outside smoking or something, and like all the kids that went to that show get let out. Just a bunch of young, redneck, white, angry teenage boys.
Yeah.
With their shirts off, looking to go left. Release. Yeah.
They're looking to go left.
I was like, God, man, this is some rough shit. So anyway, that's all I knew of that band.
Yeah.
It was sold out. I remember being impressed.
They were a big band for a while, and then all that stuff came out about him.
And then I heard that he tried to have his wife killed.
Yeah. No, I've hung out with that dude.
Oh, no.
Years
shit.
Ago with Demon Hunter. Yeah, we were playing a festival somewhere in Illinois, and they were playing too, and we hung out. He was super cool, and all those guys in that band were super cool. Super duper cool.
Man.
And it was a shame, man. I don't know what came over him, what happened, or
well,
I read
that he was trying to get a divorce, but they didn't have a prenup, and yeah. So he didn't want to give up half of his money and assets.
I mean, God,
but they had kids. I mean,
it's a shame. It really is a shame.
That's real fucked up.
Super talented dude, unfortunate situation that they're getting a divorce. That's a bummer. But I mean, to go to that extreme to like, okay, I'm gonna make sure that my wife doesn't get anything by having her killed. That's fucked up. And the guy he talked to, I believe he like talked to the dude like at the gym he went to or something. And I also think he was taking stuff like performance enhancing stuff, because when he got arrested, he was gigantic.
Hey man, you need a spot? Yeah, man.
Do you
pump some iron? Listen,
you know Hitman?
Anyway, listen, can you spot me, bro? All right, listen, in addition to that, can you kill my wife?
By the way.
Yeah. Hey, what do you max out at? What are you benching over there? Can you kill my wife?
Yeah. Is that cool?
I think, I never liked his music, so I don't have a connection to it. I think it's super fucking despicable. I think he's a piece of shit.
Yeah, it's awful.
And, you know, the kids are being hurt by that, and, you know.
I mean,
I get that you can still listen to the music, though. It's odd. It's an odd thing.
It's a little tough. We have talked about that before, where if something happens with an artist or whatever, like, you know, I've heard stories, especially having worked for bigger bands in the last few years, and it's like, I've seen things, I've heard things, like, you know, where I'm like, wow, like, I don't know if I could listen to that artist again, like, or give them money. Like, it's tough. Like a Kanye West, for instance, like, he's a notorious asshole.
Mm-hmm.
Treats people like shit. I've got friends that do security that have worked for him, mm-hmm. and have told me stories about what a pile of garbage he is.
Well, I think he's also artistically a bit overrated.
Oh, I think he's way overrated.
I think he's extremely talented, but sure. I think he's a bit overrated.
He's
calls himself God and shit.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
He's a fucking idiot.
Jesus. Yeah.
He's a fucking idiot.
But
anyway,
all that to say, when certain things happen with artists you might look up to, it's like, why do you give that person your money?
Yeah.
Like if something, like, you know, they brought up in that email, like, you know, if like that whole Me Too movement, something got pegged on one of the Metallica boys,
mm-hmm.
and just ruined their life. It's like James, like, well, would I be able to listen to this band the same? You know, if I found out that one of those dudes like sexually assaulted all these women, I'd be like, wow, that's fucked up. Like, yeah. Could I do this podcast anymore? I don't know.
Yeah, no,
it'd be weird.
We'd have to cross the line when it happened. And you know, and the thing about that band being a Christian band is, I know this, and I know you know this too, is, you know, they unfortunately get saddled with, it seems more egregious when they fuck up, because they sort of, tacitly claiming moral high ground or
right,
whatever.
Yeah.
But you know, most Christian bands, I hate to burst a bubble and you cats out there, they're doing the same shit any band's doing.
They're all hiring hitmen.
They're all killing their wives.
No, it's true. I mean,
but you know,
I can,
they're not living. They're not living that different.
Tell you that from firsthand experience. Like most of them, yeah, no,
they're normal,
totally. And I mean, when you're in like that, like praise and worship kind of world, like Hillsong is one of the big ones from Australia, yeah,
Chris
or whatever.
Tomlin.
Chris Tomlin.
I saw Chris Tomlin
stuff.
In the fucking airport yesterday.
Oh, nice. Those kind of guys I think are probably like cleaner, so to speak, you know, like they're living a little safer.
Cause they're worship leaders.
It's a big difference between that and a metal band playing in Hartford, Connecticut, where you don't go left,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Let's put it in brass tacks. And in one of those iterations, you can try to have your wife killed, and one you can't.
Yeah. You know, the thing is, fucked up stuff happens all the time with all people of all beliefs and faiths and stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, whatever. We've gone on this too long, I think. We should move on to the next email.
Yep.
Is that cool? Everyone cool with that? Super duper. All right, next email is from our longtime listener and good friend, Sarah Sobek. As all young tween girls in the 80s, I had the biggest crush on Mike Seaver. When Mike met Richard, who was referred to as Dickie by his parents, it was written in his underwear. Mike said, from now on, you will be called Boner. That's the episode I remember. Sabone? Dickie? We're going to call you Boner.
Wow.
Heading to Norway and Sweden in May.
Sweden!
I'm going to wear my new white Melp Your Podcast shirt so I can stand out more in the sea of black.
Very cool.
Love you guys. See you in Nashville for sure, if not sooner, Sarah.
Awesome.
Thanks, Sarah.
Sarah's great.
The greatest.
All right. Alex Whiting says, hello, guys. It's Alex from Maidstone in England.
G'day, mate.
Just want to say you make Monday a day to look forward to without going into depressing detail. I've been going through a lot of stress lately with family health worries, and I also struggle with depression and anxiety. But hearing you both talk positively about therapy has helped me stay positive, even when I'm having a bad week or feeling therapy isn't working. On a positive note, there hasn't been a show I haven't enjoyed, and Torben, Pawpaw, and hello, Dave, feel like old friends now. Thank you so much for the show. All the best from England.
Wow, thanks for the email, man.
Thanks, Alex.
If I could encourage you with one other thing, I don't know if it's easily available in England, especially in Maidstone, which I've been to Maidstone. One huge thing that has helped me, and maybe I've mentioned on the show or not, I can't remember. What's helped me, I've been taking it for, God, since maybe almost a year now.
Viagra.
So I have a boner all the time. But it distracts me from being depressed. No, I've dealt with anxiety for a long time, and it got really bad for a number of years where I was just like feeling really, really hopeless. And in addition to dietary changes and things like that, I started taking CBD oil. So for those of you who don't know, it's hemp oil. It's not marijuana oil. There's two different things. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if it's available just for consumers to order or purchase in England, but that stuff has changed my life. Mm. If you guys do the research on the healing properties of CBD oil, not only with anxiety and things like that, but it's an amazing, amazing oil from...
Are we sponsored by those motherfuckers now?
We should be. My cousin... Or how about this? If you want to look into any of this kind of stuff... Especially you, Alex, go to citynctrading.com. This is not an endorsement thing. It's my cousin and his wife have a CBD company in Long Beach, California. And you can read about it on there.
Okay.
If you're curious to try something else, if you're feeling anxious, depressed, this and that, it's helped me like crazy. I used to have like multiple anxiety attacks like daily. And I've had one in like a year. So...
I've only had the one on that plane, and it was no fucking joke.
It sucks. It totally sucks.
Well, hang in there, dude. Like we mentioned with the listener earlier, I mean, I wanted to read these emails on the show because I think a lot of people feel this way.
Agreed, yeah.
And, you know, we're not going to get sappy or anything. We're not therapists, but the reason I wanted to read it on the show is because you're not alone.
Exactly.
A lot of people are dealing with it. I struggle with depression and anxiety fairly intensely in pretty intense waves. Not often, but it does hit me in waves. So you're not alone. Hang in there. And we'll keep laughing, and we'll keep talking about our favorite band.
Yeah, we'll keep talking in funny voices and all that stuff. Just
Dave Mustaine will keep tweeting, so we'll have something to laugh about.
Have plenty of content.
That fucking asshole. All right, here we go. Jacob Isaacson Osmo says, hey, guys, thank you so much for reading my email in your last episode. It made my day. I just wanted to write back and tell you that I just listened to Cover Our World Blackened, Volume 1. Ethan and mine's our Metallica cover EP says, I was totally blown away. Ethan, your cover of The Frayed Ends of Sanity is one of the coolest Metallica covers I've ever heard.
Thank you very much.
And Clint, with your cover of The Unnamed Feeling, you've shown that there is some great music behind the not-so-good production of Saint Anger. I'm not deleting that. Now I'm so excited for more Metallica covers from you guys. I'd love to hear songs like Bleeding Me, Hero of the Day, Halo on Fire, and Spit Out the Bone. Well, I'd love to hear them all. As always, guys, keep up the great work with the podcast. Jacob from Sweden, New Jersey.
Sweden!
And he says, sorry, I had to do it. The power of New Jersey compelled him.
The power of Jersey compels you.
Well, we're doing Volume 2, and I can tell you from my end, at least, I've already done Whiskey in the Jar, and I will be doing Hero of the Day. I don't know what else I'm going to do.
Yeah, I'm not sure yet either. The only one I've kind of begun working on, it's maybe 20% there, is...
Day
Never Comes. Yeah. I'm doing a dubbed out reggae
version. I've heard it.
It's going to be cool.
It's good. It's fucking awesome.
I kind of want to do all three of my next ones, like really fucked up dub reggae kind of stuff.
I think that'd be cool.
Sit back, take some of that CBD oil, and enjoy the ride.
I might try to do all them in my hands. Another St. Anger tune.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Okay, thanks, Jacob. Our last email. We're almost done here.
Last email is from BK Turner. Good day. How do?
How do?
Greetings from Tulsa. My name is Bradley. I'm an OG here to give my deal of approval. My first experience with Metallica was on my birthday, August 19th, 1983. Age 13 at Arkansas Tech, Russellville, with Raven.
Wow. Bitchin'. That was the Kill 'Em All for One tour.
That's so cool.
Oh, wait. No, it was. Wait, was that
83?
Raven? Yeah, that was a Kill 'Em All for One thing, right?
I'd never heard of them, but was completely hooked that night. Well, I'd imagine. So, next show, February 20th, 1985, the infamous Wasp show with Armored Saint at Kane's Ballroom, with when Blackie and company refused to come out after Metallica, and there was really no need to. That's amazing. I don't know if I'd actually heard that story.
I've played Kane's. Have you played Kane's?
I've played Kane's numerous times. Yeah,
it's a really great club. It's like it's a small club. That's like 600 cap.
Maybe a little more. Yeah, it's and at one point was not in a great part of Tulsa. Now that area's really built up.
It was kind of an industrial.
Yeah, I love playing Kane's, man. It's such a cool. And then in the production manager's office in that venue, there's a hole in the wall famously punched through by Sid Vicious of the Sex Pistols.
Oh, nice.
Anyways, he said, just want to let you guys know, I love this podcast. My coworkers are always curious why I'm laughing, church giggles, or yelling profanities while listening to you. Anyways, keep up the great work. Torben is watching. I'll keep in touch. P.S. Clint, you're from Bama Beeham. Any chance you're a fan of Damon Johnson and Brother Kane, my second obsession?
Yeah, I mean, if you're... Do you know who Damon Johnson is?
I've heard of him.
So there was this really cool band. They were signed to Virgin. They're called Brother Kane. They had like three or four kind of number one rock hits. And Damon Johnson's a lead guy. The band didn't really work out. They got dropped. They had that song, "And Fools Shine On." Do you ever hear that song?
Maybe.
It's kind of 90s, but okay. It's cool. So, I mean, if you were from Birmingham and into rock music, you knew who the fuck Brother Kane
okay,
was.
Okay, got it.
He went on to, he's a bitchin' guitar player, too. He went on, he's done a bunch of shit. He played for Alice Cooper.
Awesome.
He's in Thin Lizzy currently.
Currently?
He's a current active guitar player and songwriter in fucking Thin Lizzy.
Wow.
Those were heroes of his.
That's crazy.
So he played with Alice for a while, and he wrote a shit ton with Alice. He like wrote for Stevie Nicks. He's a big songwriter, big guitar player.
Awesome.
And he's a Birmingham cat.
Very cool.
I'm looking up the show.
Roll Tide, man.
I'm looking. Well, yeah, I know Damon Johnson. I used to go to the country club with his daddy.
Did you now, Papa?
Well, we used to dig holes in the backyard and get into them. Not a lot to do when you don't have electricity.
Did you smoke dope through those holes?
Well, we used to carve a hole into an apple, and I'd put a little bit of that marijuana in it, and I'd smoke it with my friend, brother Damon Johnson's daddy.
I'm trying to look. I'm trying to look this show up.
Oh,
August
Tulsa?
19th, 19th. No, the August 19th one.
Oh, in Arkansas. That would have been that first tour.
August.
Drop my note.
Here it is. Texarkana.
Texarkana. Yeah, that's.
It was the Kill 'Em All for One tour. There's no set list though on their website.
Yeah, August 19th, 1983. Yeah. Crazy.
Let's see what they played on the 18th. Oh, they don't have set lists for these shows. That's weird.
What about February 20th, 1985? With the Tulsa one.
Let me find it. I'm right here on their website. By the way, Metallica.com, great resource for this show.
Oh, it's amazing. It's a wealth of knowledge.
What's the date?
February 20th, 1985.
All right, February 20th.
With
here we
Wasp.
Go. Buffalo, New York.
No, it's the Kane's Ballroom.
Oh, I'm sorry. That was January. It's not on here.
Really?
1985?
Yes, this is what Bradley says. Bradley, are you sure? Well, maybe check like 84. Maybe he got the year off by one.
Dang.
Because almost every show is on their site, right?
Yeah.
Unless we need to email
HQ. No, I'm not finding it. We should just move on, but I'm sure he's not lying. But
yeah, I'm pretty sure we believe you. I'm 90% sure we'll believe you half the time.
In the meantime, let's skedaddle out of the old email corner.
Let's skedaddle. You know what? It was super duper.
I had a
super
duper time. Let's get the fuck out.
Hey, this is Ethan and Clint from Metal Up Your Podcast, and we want to talk to you about something we love called Patreon.
That's right. Patreon is a way for fans of the show to give back to the show, to donate money that helps us in quality and content. And not only that, but we've actually come up with all sorts of fun incentives to give back to you for supporting the show.
Exactly. For instance, if you donate $5 or more, you get access to Cover Our World Blackened, which is the official Metal Up Your Podcast Metallica cover EP.
That's right, and that's the only way to get it. In addition to the EP, we also give you priority email access, meaning we'll read your email first on the show. We give you early access to Patreon-exclusive merchandise, Patreon-exclusive giveaways, and any other side projects that Ethan and I might be involved in.
There's all sorts of things you can look at on there and you can donate to. Go check it out, patreon.com/metalupyourpodcast. How do you spell that, Clint?
patreon.com/metalupyourpodcast. And if you really think about it, $5 a month for an entire year, that's really just like a cup of coffee a month. So go check it out. Thanks, everyone. Peace.
Adios.
All right, that was fun. All right, now, we already talked about the 598 EP. So we're going to You guys know all about that.
We don't need to really go into that. We did a whole episode on that.
Go listen to that episode, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously, if you're listening and you don't know what that is, let me remind you. That is the 590 EP, The Garage Days Revisited, 1987. That featured Helpless by Diamond Head, Small Hours by Holocaust, The Weight by Killing Joke, Crash Course and Brain Surgery by Budgie, and Last Caress / Green Hell by The Misfits.
Now, what's cool about Garage Inc. is that that was really the first time to have it, because since 87, it had gone out of print. They made like one pressing of it, and it's out of print.
Yeah.
You weren't really able to buy it until 98.
I got one.
I never had an OG one. So for me, the 590 EP, I didn't really hear it, you know, other than the live shit.
It came out like in other formats and cassette, CD, or overtime stuff. But yeah, the original like vinyl, there's only one pressing of.
Right. So that's cool. That's bitchin'. And so disc one, which we've also already covered, Garage Inc. disc one, you can go find that whatever episode that was.
On Spotify.
They recorded all new songs in the studio with Bob Rock. It's one of the best sounding Metallica records in their entire catalog.
It really is. It sounds great. It totally sounds good.
So they decided for disc two to sort of gather all of their sort of misfit B-sides and rarities and put them all on one thing. And then they also did all these kind of bitchin' Motorhead tunes. So we don't need to do like facts about the record. We already did that.
I mean, the only difference in this disc would be obviously this was all recorded over different eras, different decades.
So they all sound. There's not a lot of homogeny to them.
The only ones that really sound the same, like they were in the same session, would be Am I Evil, Blitzkrieg, and then the Motorhead stuff.
Well, Bread Fan and the Prince also.
Yeah, that's true.
We're from the same session
because that was from the Justice sessions. Yes. That was still Mike Klink. I think they did those.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he engineered them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we'll talk about. I think the Motorhead things are cool, but they're pretty shitty too.
We'll get to that.
We'll get to it.
Yeah.
So we'll pick up with Am I Evil. Let's listen to a little bit of it and we'll talk about it.
I mean, what don't you like about this song?
It's amazing. I mean, I'll tell you what I don't like about it. I think it's a bit long. It's about 8 minutes long.
Well, you've got that whole bridge section that changes the whole feel of the song and all that
right.
stuff.
And it never really goes back.
Yeah, it doesn't.
It goes back to the intro. But once it gets a bit faster, it kind of stays there for like three or four verses.
But this is also, I mean, the boys were, you know, they recorded this in the early 80s.
Right.
So they were probably like, let's just do it exactly how it is.
So this was originally released by Diamond Head in 1980 on their Lightning to the Nations record, which Lars and James both huge fans. And that record wasn't very old. I mean, that record came out in 80.
Mm-hmm.
According to the website, this track and Blitzkrieg were produced by Metallica and Mark Whitaker, their longtime sound dude, in October of 84. So they were already, they'd already had Lightning out.
Yeah, because Kill 'Em All,
the Electra reissue of Kill 'Em All from 88 to 91 had these two songs.
Yeah, because I thought originally it was on there, then they took it off when they got signed to Electra. That's what I thought when I was younger.
Yeah.
But then I remember getting the CD when I was probably in like 7th or 8th grade and seeing these two songs on there. And I was like, oh, in the time, I think I mentioned this before, I didn't know they were cover songs.
Right. I think a lot of people have that story.
I mean, like on the back of the Kill 'Em All vinyl or CD, it shows, you know, Hetfield, Ulrich, you know, Burton, whatever. So when I saw other names below these two songs, I didn't think anything of it. I just thought, I don't know who those names are, but this is a Metallica song. And they've definitely made this one of their songs over the years.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bitchin' song, and they fucking murder it. It was also on the Creeping Death EP.
Yeah, the B-side.
And then they did a Creeping Death / Jump in the Fire EP where they put those two together.
Yeah.
So it was on those before the Kill 'Em All Electra re-release, but... the song itself, I mean, I don't know anyone who doesn't like it. It is kind of long. I love that big epic intro.
Oh, yeah. That's iconic at this point.
I do feel like I wanted to insert this for a second. The off Hardwired Confusion, real similar intro.
Yeah.
I wonder if that was like a maybe a subtle homage or.
It might have been, yeah. I mean, it is very similar. Gun, right. Yeah.
And of course, this is the song that they all chose to play when they got everyone in the Big Four up there.
Yeah, great.
So I guess
great.
Except for the Slayer Cats.
Lombardo was up there. Right. That was it. I recently was watching all those behind the scenes stuff from that first Big Four show. It's a lot of Dave Ellefson from Megadeth kind of walking around. He's
and
like
being cool.
He's super cool.
Yeah, I've seen it too.
But at one point, James is in Slayer's dressing room, kind of asking him if they want to do it, and it gets awkward.
Yeah, I know. Because like, Jeff Hanneman's being kind of a dick or something, right?
All of them kind of are, except for Dave Lombardo. Even Tom Araya, who seems like such a nice dude.
Yeah, he is.
Was kind of like, I don't know if I want to do that. Like, I mean, maybe those dudes were like, hey, we're just going to bounce after the show, go back to our hotel. But
Kerry King does seem like one of the biggest dickheads in metal.
He does.
But our friend Brad Blazek's met him a few times. Said he was super nice.
That's good.
But he does seem like kind of like an asshole.
Maybe that's the Slayer persona he wants to put out there, that like I am kind of a dick and I'm whatever. But yeah, it just seemed weird that in that, like, James Hetfield's like, hey, we're all gonna do this big jam at the end, everybody's doing it, Lombardo's in, what do you guys think? And they're like, meh.
I know. But there's another part in those behind the scenes where Tom's like asking his girlfriend or wife or whatever to take a picture of him with James.
Yeah.
And he seems pretty stoked. Like,
it's just weird. It's just a weird thing. Like,
weird,
why,
right?
Why, like, you just got to play this Big Four show in front of so many fucking people, and you're essentially direct support. Not essentially, you are direct support. They play
Rep
for Metallica.
I think that's probably the rub. I mean, I think that until they played a show together, they were able to pass off this idea of, like, we're all the Big Four. Like,
right.
We all share. But I think when Metallica, which it was Metallica's idea, when they go, hey, we want to do something historic and special, we want to do a show with all of us, it's like, obviously, we'll be headlining that motherfucker.
I don't think anyone would question that.
But I think that once you do that, though, it makes it real.
Yeah.
That they're the big dogs. And I think maybe there was some animosity about that, or I don't know.
Okay.
It's hard to tell.
What are you going
to
do? Okay, cool. Go play your 1,000-cap club.
I was about to say, Slayer still kind of plays clubs.
They do.
You know?
I mean, I saw them here 2 years ago. It was at the War Memorial, which is maybe a 3,000-cap. It didn't look sold out. But that's the thing. Like, I think Slayer's awesome. Megadeth's awesome. Anthrax is awesome.
Yeah, yeah. I got a lot of love and respect for it all.
Of course. But you got to know if, like, Metallica wants to put on this Big Four show.
They just sold out a fucking stadium tour, dude.
They're headlining.
Yeah.
And be thankful that you're doing it. If anything, Metallica was way more excited than Slayer was.
That's the vibe I saw. Like, it seemed to me like Metallica were the ones being goofier, being more like fans. Like, they're Slayer fans.
Anthrax, too. Anthrax is goofy as hell.
It's super goofy. That's one of their things, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Scott Ian is one of the coolest dudes in rock and roll, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Just historically, he's just, I mean, I came into Scott Ian through Kiss and stuff. He's a massive Kiss fan.
Oh, yeah.
The line, my mother was a witch, she was burned alive, one of the coolest opening lines in the world.
Would you say that inspired the song, the Lunar Satan track?
Oh, it didn't.
Burn the Witch Again?
No, it didn't, but...
Thankless little
bitch. We're coming from the same world there.
Heck yeah, it's a great opening line. It's, yeah, and James, I mean, he sounds so...
Yeah.
And he was. He was young. He was
84.
Yeah. But it is interesting, like, as we've gone through all the records now, obviously, hear the progression and the evolution of his voice, but man, that vocal tone he had on Kill 'Em All and all these songs, Am I Evil and Blitzkrieg, you hear that early young passion that he had in this band.
And these recordings are really good.
Yeah, they're great.
I mean, this is post-Lightning, so they do sound better than Kill 'Em All. They sound kind of Lightning-ish.
Lightning-ish, yeah, less reverb.
Less, a little tighter, yeah, a little drier. I have personally, the solo's okay, but kind of boring. Kind of goes on and on and on.
Yeah.
And there's nothing real exciting about it. It's been performed 744 times, so that's the most of anything on this record.
It's crazy.
Other than maybe Last Caress.
Are there any other bands in the world that keep the kind of stats that Metallica does?
Yeah, Pearl Jam does on their website.
Yeah, I could see Pearl Jam doing that. Or I could see like jam bands doing that, like a Grateful Dead thing.
Like how many times they've played these songs.
Right. But to me, it's just so cool to go on Metallica's website and just click any song.
It's real cool.
Tells you the first time they played, the last time they played it, how many times.
They last played it February of this year in Lisbon.
Yeah. So cool.
I mean, their archive game is real strong over at Metallica.com.
Very strong, yeah. You should check out EthanLuck.com. Our archive game is...
How many times have you played Am I Evil? Hold on. Think about it.
Like, out at an actual show?
Yeah.
Oh, that's zero, yeah.
Yeah, okay,
In
cool.
my house... at least
valuable though. Zero, it's zero, and yet that is valuable information.
It's valuable information. Yeah.
When was the last time you played it?
Last time I played it was, I don't know, maybe a month or two ago.
When was the last time you didn't play it?
I debuted it when I was probably in seventh grade.
Right.
I debuted it in my friend's house when we were learning it together.
Right.
That's when I debuted it. That would be in. It would have been in Laguna Niguel, California.
Laguna Niguel.
Laguna Niguel.
Let's move on to Blitzkrieg. This song is fucking awesome.
It's
dude.
A ripper. Obviously, you heard it at the top of the show, and you heard it just again, but it's a ripper.
I love that verse riff, dude. It's so tight and crunchy.
Love
it. It's so good, man.
Let us have peace. Let us have lice.
Yeah. Originally released by the band Blitzkrieg, with they're pulling the old the Sabbath train.
Yeah, Anthrax did that, too.
Naming a song after their own band. In 1981, it was a B-side to their Buried Alive single. This one also, like we said, was produced by Metallica and Mark Whitaker in 84. Again, it's the same exact thing as Am I Evil. It was on the Electra reissue. Kill 'Em All. It was also on the Creeping Death single and the Creeping Death / Jump in the Fire EP. All right. Great recording.
It's really good. I love the recording of this one. That opening riff, to me, is... I feel like it should have been a Metallica riff.
Yeah. It's a little too bouncy. Like, a lot of these covers are bouncy.
Yeah.
I don't know how to describe it. Like, the punk aesthetic of it is like, it's a little too up or something. It's not quite menacing enough. Although right. This is a menacing song. I don't know. Like, there's some riffs of, like, you know what's weird about this song? Is at the end of the song, they fucking unload a bunch of riffs that they never played in the beginning.
Right.
At the very end, I'm like, how did you save all these badass riffs?
Well, they're just left over, and we just thought we'd throw them at the end.
Man. We thought we'd just up the fucking game at the very end.
We didn't want to get rid of them. We just didn't want to forget them, so we just record them at the end of the song.
Great solo. Chords keep modulating up.
Yeah.
Whenever there's a lot of modulating going on, Kirk usually shines.
Yeah.
Because what that forces him to do, like, if the solo's just in E minor,
yeah,
he can kind of just do his, like, sort of... bullshit
his quirky
stuff,
thing.
But when the chords are changing and modulating, he has to actually get inside of it.
Oh yeah, for
and,
sure.
And move with the chords, yep. And that usually forces him to be more intentional, melodic.
Oh yeah,
etc.
I love that. I joked about the how we changed it to let us have peace, let us have rice. But you actually put let us have peas, let us have rice.
Yeah, peas and rice.
I forgot.
And
about
I put
that.
Lettuce.
Yeah, lettuce.
Like the green leafy
lettuce
thing.
Have peas, let us have rice.
Cool halftime section after the solo with all the ambient guitars. Yeah. I love that.
James burps in the mic. Were you just trying to burp?
I did burp. What are we drinking here? We're drinking some local...
We got some Yazoo Pale Ale.
Yazoo Pale Ale.
Yeah, if you're listening, you want to sponsor the show, we'll gladly accept.
I called Ethan on the way to HQ1, and I was going to go get those Megadeth beers, but...
I think they're high gravity, so you can't just get them at Kroger.
Here in Tennessee... There's this fucking law that
it's
we can't
stupid.
Buy liquor or high-gravity beers on fucking Sundays. Yeah. Why? God gives a shit?
I mean, you want to get biblical, there's a verse in the Bible that talks about bringing your best wine to a party. And I can't buy wine today, though. I want to bring my best bottle of wine to Clint's party.
Everyone knows by now that I don't believe in God, and that's right. Fine. But let me say this. If there is a God, and I don't know that if there is or not, so I reserve judgment. Now, if there is... And he gives a fuck about buying liquor on Sundays, we're all fucked. We're all in deep shit. If that's what the God of the universe is concerned about.
I'm going to go ahead and say it's probably not. I just think it's the God of our state capital 3 miles away from here.
Well, but they're trying to get that law changed. And
they are.
Hopefully that happens.
It'll take a while, but...
Let's see. Performed 83 times.
Yeah, last
played in February in Italy.
Crazy.
Because they got this rotating cover slot, now,
right,
which
yeah.
I think is a great idea.
I think we can probably safely guess that they're going to keep doing that on the U.S. tour.
I think the arena tour over here this year and next year is going to be real similar.
Yeah.
Now, what I'm hoping they do, because this is what they did on the World Magnetic Tour, is as they worked into the second and third year, they start to pull deeper cuts out.
Right, exactly.
I think as far as covers go, I don't know if they're going to do that.
I mean, at that point, you know, in the tour cycle and you're going through similar cities or nearby cities that you've already gone to, there's going to be a lot of repeat customers coming to shows.
Right.
You know, obviously, it'll be our third of the World Wired Tour, you know?
And we're going to go to four or five shows.
Right. Yeah.
And I hope they pull out some Death Magnetic shit.
Me too. Well, they have been doing The Day That Never Comes.
A little bit.
Not every night, but it's been in there.
You know what tune I've been listening to a lot? I made a mix for myself of like songs I don't spend as much time with, just to sort of like get some different flavor. Man, I've been listening to the shit out of My Apocalypse.
That's a great song.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
The speed of that song.
Yep. That's a great one.
Unbelievable. Yeah. And a cool lyric too.
Oh yeah.
Anyway, all right, let's move on to one of my... It's actually my favorite cover of theirs, Bread Fan.
Well, you know I love Bread Fan.
Yeah.
This song is so fucking good.
It's amazing.
It's a great, great, great song.
Originally released by Budgie in 73 on Never Turn Your Back on a Friend.
Aw, that's so nice.
Kind of a wimpy record title.
What the fuck is up? We're Budgie. We just recorded a song called Bread Fan.
Yeah.
We're not sure what that means. It's on a record called Never Turn Your Back on Your Friend.
Is that like the This Many Kids? Like, he's like,
good night, Dark Continent. This song's called Say Please and Thank You and make sure you eat all your food.
Don't forget to eat your vitamins.
Clean your plate.
Eat your vitamins.
Brush your teeth.
Yeah, and floss too.
Good night, Dark Continent.
We were Budgie.
Say Please and Thank You.
This song's called Bread Fan.
Yeah.
Clint had nothing.
I was going to say the food table, you know, the food pyramid when I was growing up, the thing at the bottom of it, which indicated that you should eat the most of it, was fucking bread and shit.
Yeah. Carbs.
Carbs.
Yeah. Yeah, the food pyramid has been not great forever.
Pluto is a fucking planet.
Yeah.
Well, it's changed.
It's a planet again.
Is it back to being a planet?
I think they've redesignated it back as a planet. Can we eat more bread now?
Yeah, I wish. Pasta's good for you again.
Well, this was originally released on the Harvester of Sorrow and Eye of the Beholder singles.
Eye of the Beholder was a U.S. single.
Right.
Harvester of Sorrow was an international single.
Yeah, and as we mentioned before, this and also with the Prince were engineered by Mike Klink when they were in the early sessions for Justice.
Mike Klink was going to produce Justice.
Yeah, well, and then Fleming was famous for coming in and basically saying, like, what I heard was garbage.
Yeah.
That sucks, because Mike Klink did fucking Use Illusion 1 and 2, Appetite. I mean, he's done a lot of cool stuff.
Well, it was kind of on the success of Appetite, because Lars kind of got real obsessed with Guns.
Yeah.
Just real fascinated by their whole vibe.
I'm still fascinated by their vibe.
Me too. They're just a band. Talk about a band that just keeps giving in terms of, like, what a fascinating body of work.
I know.
Interesting cats.
A short but fascinating body of work.
Well, it's really, to me, it's those four records, man. It's Appetite, Lies, Usual Illusion 1 and 2.
Yeah. And even, I mean, if you want to get technical about it, it's three full-length records.
Right.
And one EP. A cover record, and then an Axl.
But the thing is, Lies, GNR Lies was a full record. It was like...
Well, it was eight songs.
Yeah, it's like covers, and then the acoustic.
Live covers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that great Mamakin cover
live
on there.
Mamakin, and... But then, of course, Used to Love Her, One in a Million, Patience, and...
Why am I blanking?
Yeah, what's going on here?
Oh, jeez. Also cool that with Mike Klink, they did that in one day. Those four songs. All sat in a room together and recorded that in one day, which is pretty big.
What's your favorite Guns N' Roses song? Because for those of you who don't know, we're both big GNR fans.
Oh, yeah. I'm a big Night Train fan.
Crazy. They did an acoustic version of You're Crazy.
That's right, yeah. I love Night Train. I'd have to say on Usual Illusion 1 and 2, I'm a big fan of Civil War.
Oh, fucking love it.
Such a good song. I like Garden of Eden.
Love it.
That's great.
It's kind of punk rock.
Yeah, totally. Dig it.
My favorite Guns N' Roses song of all time is Locomotive.
Oh, yeah.
A really strange deep cut from Usual Illusion 2 they've never played live.
Yeah. We'll dive into more Guns N' Roses when we end up covering kind of the Guns Metallica tour, saga, drama, all that stuff.
We'll do that for sure. What do we got? Oh, wait, no, we're still talking about Bread Fan.
We're talking about Bread Fan still.
What do we got here? Okay.
It was recorded, it was the rough mix, rough mix by Flaming Rasmussen, recorded and mixed at 101 in Los Angeles in 1988.
Yeah, they said on the, I thought this was interesting, they had a little production note where they said, "We later attempted to mix these songs properly, but somehow the energy and feel got lost along the way, so here they are in their rawest form." Speaking about making records and all that, it is true, you can sort of overthink or overdub or overmix the vibe out of something,
right,
that you capture just in a room, the energy in a room.
Yeah, agreed.
And sometimes it is best to just put that shit out.
I say it was either that or James and Lars were like, "Hey, we're kind of going for this low bass thing for this new record. Can we mix these two like that too?"
Right.
Because they do sound very Justice-y.
Yeah.
Very dry, hardly any bass you can hear in this thing.
The Prince especially.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But Bread Fans has a little more balls, a little more girth.
Yeah, yeah.
But
I remember hearing these for the first time when I was, it was probably around junior high, and just, I didn't even know really what a B-side was. I kind of knew because, like, Pearl Jam, I was getting into them, and then...
They did a lot of B-sides.
Oh, yeah, I did a lot of those, and then once I started buying, like, singles, mm-hmm. I'm like, what is this other song on side B? Like, holy shit, this is awesome, you know? So, yeah, I got obsessed with especially Bread Fan and The Prince.
Yeah. I'm not as big on The Prince. We'll talk about that here in a minute. Okay. But Bread Fan, though, I mean, especially that, man, I've talked about it before, but that Webster Hall version, this new Webster Hall version they did, I got it on vinyl. And,
yeah.
And they don't do that slow part, the slow, clean stuff in the middle.
I kind of dig that part.
I could do without it.
You know, you don't like it?
I think it's cool. I think it's cool. But when they don't do it, I don't miss it.
I love that Kirk part with the...
Yeah, he has a cool little melodic
moment. I dig that.
I just like it when it's just sort of like a 4-minute fucking hit you in the face barn burner.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
That slow section just kind of takes all the energy out of it. I wrote in my notes, "I have no clue what the lyrics are in the verses, and it doesn't matter."
It doesn't. Use it, do it.
Lose it.
Cool.
Through it. Cool. Super duper.
Bread Fan, subba dubba dum, and jump in the pool.
Does someone just want to grab a big loaf of bread and jump in a pool?
Oh, yeah.
And eat some fucking delicious wet bread.
Oh, I love wet bread.
Wet bread, man. Can't fuck with that.
Who doesn't love wet bread?
Well, obviously, Budgie.
A lot of people will take bread and like maybe dip it in some olive oil and vinegar. I like to get a big pint of tap water. Local tap water, just dip my bread in that thing. And, delicious.
You know people who do like hot dog eating contests and shit?
Oh, yeah.
They tear the hot dogs in half and dip them in water.
Yeah, it's because it's soggy real quick.
So they slide down your throat.
That's disgusting.
Who are these people doing this?
If anyone out there has done a hot dog eating contest and done that, please let us know, because I'm fascinated by
that
stuff.
How do you crack into that industry?
Yeah, man. Well, I started kind of locally, and I just always liked hot dogs. I love my mom made them, and my dad made them. I made them myself, and I just started competing amongst my friends. And my friend said, "You should talk to this guy. He knows a place you can compete bigger for a bigger prize."
Yeah, it's all about who you know. You know, even in the hot dog eating contest.
Yeah,
industry.
And now I go on tour, and I sponsored by Nathan's Hot Dogs, and I just travel around. And I eat a bunch of hot dogs. That's my job. This is sponsored by Nathan's.
Man, your hot dog guy is pretty convincing. Like, I believe it.
I don't know what voice that was, but I think I made up a new
that's
one.
That's Hot Dog Guy.
I'll figure out what his name is.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just Nathan. Nathan the Hot Dog Guy.
Maybe he's like an heir to the...
Well, man, I just kind of, you know, I just go on tour and eat hot dogs all the time.
Yeah, I was going to go to law school there for a minute, but then I just realized I'll just eat hot dogs professionally.
I was like, wait a second, I can get paid money to eat hot dogs all the time? Hey, man, that sounds great.
Man, I heard that you guys sometimes dip it in water.
Yeah, man. Well, see, what it does is you open up your throat just right. It's kind of like a snake, man, eating a mouse. You dip that shit in water, it gets real soggy, it slides right down, and it just goes right down through my esophagus into my stomach, and I can fit so many in there now.
How many hot dogs can you eat in one sitting?
Oh, well, how long is a sitting?
30 minutes.
30 minutes? You don't have enough hot dogs to put in my belly.
What's the next day toilet situation like after
a hot dog? I don't even bother with the toilet, man. I stick my finger down my throat afterwards and just get rid of it all. And I feel great. I don't gain weight.
It's true. I've seen those people. They're usually thin.
A lot of them are skinny.
They're thin people.
You're like a little skinny dude from like Tokyo who wins or something.
But it's like, where does it go? It's a physics. It's a physics problem.
I would be shocked if most of those people, when they finish and they win and they get their trophy, they're like, all right, I'm gonna go back to my dressing room. They don't walk in there and just shove their finger down their throat and just get rid of it all.
Here's what else is not happening for the big winner, the big blue ribbon winner at the goddamn Piccadilly County Fair. No celebratory sex after that. hey, I just won the gold trophy because I ate 800 hot dogs. Let's do it.
I'd imagine, who knows, are there hot dog groupies?
Oh my God.
Like, hey,
I have a fetish for it.
I just saw you ate 500 hot dogs.
What do you say we go back to my place and lay on a hot dog shaped bed and just put some hot dogs in some water and just rub wet bread on each other?
Hot
dog.
Ooh.
I'm actually getting kind of grossed out.
Oh, I'm kind of turned on. It's weird.
Anyway.
What band are we talking about?
Breadfan's been performed 315 times. Last in February in Barcelona. Now, the whole Mommy Wears Fluffy thing, the great mystery, that was meant to be on the front of the Prince.
Right.
But it got through the mixing process, kind of got all fucked up. And so now it's on the back of Breadfan.
Ruined it for me.
So now I can't listen to that song.
That's why you don't like the Prince.
Hashtag me too.
Oh.
Hello. Hello. Let's get into the Prince.
All right, you're not as big a fan of the song as I am.
It just doesn't stick with me, man.
Really?
The riffs are bitching. They're super tight.
Yeah.
James really shines in it, I think. But the lyric doesn't resonate with me. I don't really know what it's about.
You know, like the chorus? I think the chorus is like, to me, it is a Metallica song.
How does the chorus go?
See his face, see the fire, time to die. Whoa.
I like those whoa. Yeah.
Oh, I love
that. I like those woes.
The bridge is great on the song. There's all sorts of good stuff in here. But again, you don't have to like it, Clint. I just love it.
I wish I liked it. I mean, here's what I will say about like... Here's one thing I'm grateful for with Metallica, other than Saint Anger, is even the songs I don't gravitate towards, they're bitchin' badass songs.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Because Metallica is fucking awesome.
Dude, the outro thing on this thing, that cool... I love that thing.
I think the out-of-the-gate solo at the top is a little sloppy Joe.
Yeah, it is.
But it's kind of a cool vibe.
It's a good vibe. I've never been a huge fan of solos at the beginning of a song.
Me neither. It's like...
Unless it's just like, oh shit, that's fucking cool. Like, if it just... But sometimes, you know, like songs like this where it'll go on for like 2 minutes or something and you're kind of like, okay, can we get to the vocals now?
Well, and it's just like super aggro. Like, the solos at the beginning of One, Fade to Black, Sanitarium are super melodic.
Oh yeah.
They make sense. This is like hit you in the fucking face.
Yeah.
Solo. It's like a shred solo.
Yeah, it is.
Cool moments with just the bass and the turnarounds. I always love hearing.
Oh yeah,
always love hearing Jason.
Yeah,
shine, and especially in the '88, you know, like that wasn't happening a lot.
It's kind of like that little bass part that there's that break in the.
That's what I'm talking about. That happens
a
couple times.
Yeah, but like I love how dirty it is.
Yeah,
it's almost a little sloppy, but in a cool way.
Yeah, I mean, and especially when we get to the Motorhead shit, there's really cool fuzz tones on Jason's bass.
Yeah.
I think the bridge to the Prince is amazing. It's my favorite part. Super epic.
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah, it's great. I love it. I want to listen to it right now. We are listening to it right now. It's playing below us.
Oh, listen to the sweet, soothing sounds of the Prince right
now.
Can
you hear it? Can you hear it?
This is my favorite part. Listen to this part right here.
Oh, I love that. Oh, wow. Super duper.
Like a wet hot dog.
It's like a wet hot dog going down my throat.
The Prince has been played 33 times, last time in 2011.
That's crazy.
That's a long time ago.
It's a long time ago, and I thought for sure they would have played it more than that. 33.
How about that amazing, insightful revelation? That was a long time ago.
Well, that was a long time ago. That was 7 years ago.
You know what? 7 years? That's a long time. Do you know what it is? It's 1 year more than 6 years.
It really is. It's three more than four.
I have a dude that I work with who likes to tell stories a lot. Okay? Now, somehow, on his journey through life, never got the old memo that... When you tell a story, it needs to be fucking funny or crazy.
Have a good payoff.
Like you need at the end of telling it when you've sort of commanded a room or a bus, and at the end of that story, people aren't going, "Dude, that's crazy." Then don't
exactly.
tell that.
Don't
fucking
tell the story.
Story.
What I often do if I know someone that like doesn't tell great stories, I'll cut them off. Like so pretend you're about to tell me a story.
Hey man, this one time I put my shoes on and
dude, that's amazing. And I just turn around and walk away.
That's hard to pull off, though. I mean,
or I'll go, man, that's a cool story. Like, cool shoes, and you just walk away.
I'll just let the whole story burn down however long it takes, and then I'll just have the 1,000-yard stare. Like, what's wrong, man? What's up? I'm like, man, that story made me want to kill myself.
it made me want to hire a hitman to kill me.
Because the story would be like, man, this one time, back when I was like a kid, this is a big pet peeve of mine too. Man, last Sunday, I was at Kroger. Wait, was it Sunday? It may have been Monday. Hold on, Sunday. No one cares.
No, it was 3 p.m. Well, the sun was still up, so maybe it was...
I don't give a fuck what day it was. Just tell the story.
If it's relevant to the story and it's going to make for a better ending, great.
Right. It was on Sunday, and you can't buy liquor on Sundays. Okay.
Okay.
Then you robbed a liquor store. All right.
Right. No way.
That's crazy.
Wow.
Love it.
Holy shit.
But it'll be like, yeah, man, I was like, I got on my motorcycle, I drove down the road. A motorcycle has two wheels on it.
Yeah, and I drove it
down the road. I went from A to B and then back to A. And then later on, I took a nap.
Yeah, and I was also wearing a helmet because in the state of Tennessee, you have to wear a helmet.
I'm like, dude, are you fucking kidding me? Are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah.
Okay, The Prince has been played 33 times. We already talked about that. Would you want to see that come back into the set?
I would.
You would?
I definitely would, yeah.
If they were doing another by request tour, you would vote for that.
I would request it.
Okay.
I'd be like, hey, James, play The Prince.
Before my bedtime.
You can totally hear me from front of house.
Let's talk about Stone Cold Crazy.
I know your thoughts on this.
I know. You love it.
I love this cover. I love how aggressive it is. A lot of no bass happening in this song, too. You ever notice that? You ever crank it and it's like not bass heavy at all?
Yeah.
And it kind of sounds like they recorded it in kind of the Black Album era. I know it was around that time.
Yeah. They recorded it for actually an electro compilation.
Right. Exactly.
I can't pronounce it. How do you pronounce this? Rubaiyat?
I would say it was called Rubaiyat.
That's one of the worst titles I've ever fucking heard of.
What's up? We're Metallica. We're on a new compilation called Rubaiyat.
We're on this new thing that no one can say. It was Elektra's 40-year anniversary of being a record label.
Yeah.
So they had all of their artists do cover songs. And they liked it so much they made it the B-side to Enter Sandman.
Yep.
And it won a fucking Grammy. Do you think it should have won a... I mean, that's interesting. It won a Grammy.
Cool with me.
It just doesn't seem that special to me.
I mean, I think it's pretty
cool.
Special. I mean, also the history of the song, or I'm sorry, history of Metallica in that song. I mean, you know, a couple year or two later,
they played it at the tribute.
Yeah, James is singing it on stage with the surviving members of Queen for the Freddie Mercury tribute.
And Tony Iommi.
Yeah, and Tony, that's right. And that was super cool. I don't know. I feel like it's another one that Metallica kind of made their own, even though they do it pretty much like the original.
Right.
But this is what turned me on to Queen. This in Wayne's World.
Yeah.
You know, like.
Dude, when Wayne's World came out, Bohemian Rhapsody got back on the charts.
I know. It's crazy.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that whole scene is an iconic movie moment now.
That car scene. Amazing.
Oh, yeah.
So fucking
it's
amazing.
It's so good.
I love it when Garth doesn't know the words and he's singing anyway.
Totally. My favorite is towards the end of it where Mike Myers does the nothing really matters.
Yeah.
And he's kind of like making it, he's like puckering his mouth a little bit. It's so good.
Yeah.
If you're going to spew into this.
Stacy. You got me a gun rack. I don't even own a gun, let alone mini guns that would necessitate a rack. She's like, so you're saying you don't like it? Stacey, we broke up 6 months ago.
Get over.
Get the net.
Yeah.
Get the net.
A good highlight in that movie is Ed O'Neill, a.k.a. Al Bundy, also...
the dude at the donut shop?
Mr. Pritchett on Modern Family.
And in the dude in Dutch.
He's in Dutch, yeah. Yeah, Ed O'Neill, great actor.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's the donut... what's the donut shop called in that movie again?
I don't know.
I forgot. Someone will email us about it.
Yeah, it's actually called Roy's.
Performed 153 times last Manchester 2017. So not that long ago.
I'm still looking up this donut place.
What is it called? Isn't it like a hockey themed?
Stan Makita Donuts.
Oh, Stan, that's right, yeah.
Stans,
yeah.
Okay, back to Metallica.
Back to life. Stone Cold Crazy, what do you want to say about it? You're not a huge fan of it. I love it.
It's
super heavy.
Cool.
There's good. I mean,
it is fucking heavy. Now the thing is, the original's pretty heavy. I think the original. So it was on Queen's 1974 record, Sheer Heart Attack. That was some music critic in the 80s referred to that song on that record as thrash metal before that term existed.
I mean, kind of is.
Right.
I mean, there's some...
It's pretty heavy.
Yeah, and for 1974, that's crazy. I mean, Sabbath wasn't doing stuff like that. It was its own thing.
Sabbath wasn't doing fast shit.
No, they weren't. They never really
Sabbath
did fast.
Was doing doom, basically like heavy doom.
Yeah.
But they weren't doing like big up-tempo shit. I mean, I think it's cool. Again, hearing the sort of strength of the band and the Black Album, 1990 Metallica was such a strong time.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
It's not my favorite song. I'd prefer to hear Freddie Mercury do it, but
yeah.
I don't skip it or anything.
I do love when James changes the lyrics.
Try fucking hitting me.
You gotta fucking get up and run.
Yeah.
I like that.
Change, put fuck in there twice, won a Grammy. And that's strong.
No big deal.
Okay. Killing Time. Love this one.
So fucking what?
Oh, I'm sorry. I went to Killing Time.
You did go to Killing Time.
Whoopsie.
We're going to So What?
We're going to edit that out now?
Nah.
So fucking what?
Maybe like a fucking ding dong on my own show.
Hey, we had one episode where we skipped an entire track and had to re-record it later after Paul left
Hardwired.
Our house. Yeah, you may have not have known that because of our editing genius, but it happened.
We're doing a bit of drinking.
So yeah, So What by the Anti-Nowhere League. They released it in 1981 as a B-side to the Streets of London single. This song is so aggressive, fucking in your face, and fucking offensive. I mean,
it's funny.
There's some shit they say in there where it's like, oh,
yikes.
I don't want to say those lyrics out loud.
Rut row. Yeah, I agree. It was more appealing to me as a kid.
Yeah. It's a little tough.
I've gotten older. I'm like, and I think they feel it. I mean, they haven't played it since 2011.
Yeah.
They played it 300. They played it a lot in the 90s, dude.
Yeah, they did. I mean, it was a big song for them in the 90s as far as like just the fan favorite, you know? But yeah, I mean, I can't imagine Hetfield nowadays wanting to sing those lyrics.
Yeah,
like, I think it'd be a little tough for him. But I do love that you made a note of this, and I was going to bring this up. The MTV European Music Awards, they were supposed to play King Nothing in 96, and they ended up playing Last Caress and this back-to-back as like an FU to MTV, because something, I can't remember what happened. They got kind of screwed on something or whatever. Little Boys in Sum 41 used to use this song, the Metallica version of this, at the end of their shows.
Yeah, they're big Metallica fans.
Yeah, they are.
They did the MTV Icon.
Yep.
I think it's cool. I mean, I love it in Cunning Stunts. I love they open with it.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's got a lot of fucking attitude. That animal dude from the Anti-Nowhere League is a character.
Mm-hmm.
That's the dude from that band, right?
Animal. I think so, yeah.
But yeah, it doesn't age well for me.
The feel of it does, the aggression of it. Really, the only thing that doesn't age well for me is just the lyrical content. Where, like, when I'm in, like, eighth grade, I'm like, yeah. Like, I shove my cock right down his throat. Fuck you. Well, but now it's kind of like, ugh. God.
Well, the original, the cats who wrote it in the Anti-Nowhere League, they said that they were actually in a pub and overheard these two dudes kind of trying to outdo each other.
Okay.
And so they wrote it kind of to make fun of that.
Got it.
I've, you know.
Yeah.
It's sort of like a criticism of, mm-hmm. of blowhardy bravado bullshit.
Okay. I've even shoved a wet hot dog down his throat. So what?
I even won my first hot dog eating competition. So what?
So what?
Oh, my God. Should we move on?
We shall.
All right. Killing Time.
Killing Time. This is a good one.
I love Killing
Time. I did Killing Time.
Originally released by Sweet Savage in 1981 as a B-side to the Take No Prisoner single. This is one of the songs they played at their very first show, dude.
Yeah, crazy.
A B-side to The Unforgiven.
I know, interesting choice.
Quite the juxtaposition.
Exactly, that's what I was going to say. It was like, you would have thought maybe like, hey, we also recorded this other random cover song, it's a little more mellow, maybe use that as the Unforgiven. But maybe at this time they're like just sitting on these covers, like, fuck it, let's just put all B-side covers for all the, I mean, a lot of the singles to the Black Album had covers on. I mean, it was Sam and Uncle Crazy. This one obviously had Killing Time on the back of Unforgiven. I also looked up, too, that it also was, where is it on my notes? Oh, I'm sorry, my bad. I got that mistaken for So What. It was on also a B-side to Sad But True.
Right.
Never mind. Not going to edit that one out. Y'all can hear it in all its glory.
So What and Killing Time, they were kind of recorded in the same kind of session.
Mm-hmm.
Roughly produced by Bob Rock with Hetfield and Ulrich. Old Randy, Engineer Randy, engineered it.
Randy Watson. Randy Watson.
That boy good.
Killing Time. Thank you very much. I do love how much you can hear Jason's backup vocals on the chorus.
Oh,
Killing Time! Yeah.
And James does them too, but you can hear Jason cut through it.
I can hear Jason in there.
I had the same note. Oh, wait, are you looking at my notes?
Yeah, I'm just following your notes. Cool.
Yeah, I love hearing Jason's vocal on it. I love the shit out of Jason, man.
Oh, God.
Love and miss him. I love hearing him shine in Metallica shit.
I think he just recently celebrated his 55th birthday.
Oh, really?
I think I saw something online. I think he's recently turned 55.
Okay, cool.
That means he's a senior citizen.
Wow.
It's 55, I think, still, right?
I'm not really up on my senior citizen designation.
I'll ask my dad is a senior citizen. He's 66.
Yeah,
He's getting in town tomorrow, so I'll ask him. And we'll report back.
Seems young for that.
It does seem young for that, but I'm pretty sure that's at least when you can start getting senior citizen discounts.
That's
and
when
stuff.
You can go see a movie for $117 instead of the
exactly.
Of the
you can go to Golden Corral and get like a free soft serve.
Golden
after your
Corral. You got the. You know that something that comes up and you're like, God, Golden Corral sucks. They're like, well, they got steak now.
They got what? They got steak now.
Well, what you get is a buffet now, but you can get a steak in there.
Yeah, that's going to be a fucking killer steak, homie.
Real good quality shit.
Really good steak
from
in there.
The nicest factory in Illinois.
At the pay $10. It's the fucking Spotify of food. You pay $10 and eat whatever the fuck you want in there.
Exactly.
And believe me, people do, especially here in the South.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, what else can we say about Killing Time? The gang vocal we like. I think the solo's good.
Yeah, good solo.
Performed 18 times last time in 2011.
Very cool.
Overkill. Now, let me say this about these Motorhead tunes.
I feel like we might be on the same page.
So here's the deal.
I love them. Oh, what? Just kidding.
So Overkill, Damage Case, Stone Dead Forever, and Too Late, Too Late were recorded while the boys were rehearsing. They played at Lemmy's 50th birthday party under a secret show called the Lemmy's.
Was that the Whiskey, right?
The Whiskey Go-Go. Yeah. They wore wigs. It's super fun. Super cool.
They all kind of dressed like Lemmy and,
While they were rehearsing for that, it says they recorded these four songs direct to two-track at the plant in Sausalito. They recorded them all on December 13, 1995. And they ended up coming out on subsequent Load singles.
There was a Hero of the Day single where all four of them were on there?
Yeah, the international one.
The international one, that's right.
Because they had U.S. singles and they would kind of change them.
Yeah.
Overkill itself, though, was on the Until It Sleeps single. And then it was also on the international Hero of the Day single. Now, we'll still talk about each song individually, but my general feeling about these four tunes, I mean, I love Motorhead. I know they're huge fans.
Oh, yeah.
I love all that. These songs are not great. These are not great recordings.
They're not awful, but they're like if I listen to Garage Inc. Disc 2, I usually stop once Overkill starts. Now, we'll get to it, but of all these four, I'd have to say Damage Case is probably my favorite.
My favorite's Too Late, Too Late.
Okay.
But I don't like, it's weird because the 95 era James, like Load era James vocally, is one of my favorite, like 95 to 99.
Not reflective on these songs.
But he doesn't sound good on these songs. It sounds like he's singing a lot of them off the mic. Like, I don't know if he's looking at a music stand or something.
It sounds like that, and also sounds like he's kind of trying to do Lemmy a little bit.
And he is.
They kind of did for that show at the Whiskey, you know?
And I get it. They're just having fun.
But
the thing is, they did put it on the record.
Yeah. I mean, the boys liked it enough to where they're like, okay, put it out.
Like, it's just weird that it's, like, official Metallica canon. I don't think it's up to scratch for that.
I mean, I'll say this. I do like these over the Ramones covers they did during Saint Anger.
I do, too.
You know? But it is a little odd, though. Like, his voice doesn't sound as strong as it did in that era.
Here's what I have for Overkill. I think that there's a lot of fuzz bass, whatever, because a lot of the tones are the same, because it sounds like they just sort of hammered these out.
Yeah.
And didn't overdub. They didn't make any changes.
Right.
Which is pretty bitchin', but very punk rock. But... the fuzz bass, cool. The drums are fucking relentless. I love
them. The drums are the best sounding part of these four songs, I think. I mean, to me, it almost sounds like that kind of Black Album Load Reload production.
But it's like they just set up the mics and let them go. Like, I don't think they did a lot of engineering for this.
What amazing! I mean, they're just rehearsing. They're like,
they may have just recorded them just as documents for themselves, and then listened back kind of loud over the mains and go, you know, this is pretty fucking cool.
Let's have someone mix that. You know,
probably put this out.
Yeah.
I wonder if they were actually mixed.
Well, if they recorded direct to two-track...
Yeah, there's not a lot of mixing to do.
No, I mean, you basically just mix it as it's being recorded and then just master it. But, I mean, I don't think they sound awful by any means. I just think, you know, the performances are pretty good. Hetfield's voice I don't love on these. And also, like, you know, I love Motorhead. I don't necessarily love these Motorhead songs.
I'm the same way.
Damage Case, like I said, is probably my favorite one.
Yeah. Well, Overkill's from the album Overkill, so is Damage Case. And then Too Late, Too Late was the B-side to the Overkill single.
Yeah.
This record came out in 1979. The end of Overkill has a pretty rough guitar solo.
Yeah.
It's too loose for me. Performed 65 times. Last time in 2011.
Awesome. Let's see. Was it this one or Damage Case that Lemmy did with the band in Nashville? The show
he did Damage Case and Too Late, Too Late in 2009.
Ah,
in Nashville.
Right. Okay, that's the one. That's the show I missed when I was on tour.
It's pretty bitchin'.
Real bitchin'.
Let's move on. Let's move through these.
Okay.
Damage Case. All right, this was on the Hero of the Day single. Same session, similar issues. Bass tone, fucking killer.
Yeah.
My note is that these songs don't seem to have much purpose.
They were rehearsing. They tend to document and archive everything about their band, including, I'm sure, every tuning room warm-up is recorded.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Everything is documented. Yeah, multi-track recorded, documented on a hard drive.
If you watch the tuning room, like, go watch a current tuning room versus maybe like a year ago when the stadium tour just started, or tuning rooms from World Magnetic.
Yeah.
When they're talking amongst themselves in between playing, you can hear that it's just like a room mic, which is what the tuning room used to be. It sounded kind of shitty.
Yeah.
And then even when they're like playing a riff, but they're talking, it sounds like shit. When they actually go into something, you then hear a multi-track mix.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
so they're multi-track recording the tuning room and mixing it.
Yeah. Well, if there's some of those videos you watch and you can see a dude in the corner like engineering.
It's usually that Mike Gillies cat.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Who I bumped into in the St. Louis show.
Yeah.
And I called him the tuning room guy.
Yeah. He's like, geez, thanks.
By the way, for those of you who listen out there, which we've heard from a lot more chapter heads too since we had Wayne on, we don't ever want to be germy about this shit, but if any of you guys know Mike or know any of those crew people and you think they would be interested in coming on the show and just kind of talking about what they do, put in a good word for us and let us know and get us connected with those people. That'd be really fucking killer to talk to that
dude. Yeah, it'd be fun, for sure.
Tuning room guy!
Hey, tuning room guy!
So Damage Case, I don't really have that much to say about it. You know, it's James takes a solo on it.
Yeah, he does.
Swaggery. It's got that James swagger.
Yeah.
It's a bit long.
A little bit long.
Not great.
Yeah.
It's real loose.
I hate doing this, but it's kind of tough to talk about these songs. Like, I know there's people out there listening that probably love these covers.
I don't know. They don't get talked about a lot, though.
They don't. And honestly, they've never really done much for me since 98. I mean, this thing will be 20 years old this year.
It's one of the reasons I don't listen to Disc 2 very much. Like, to me, Garage Inc. really is Disc 1.
It is Disc 1, and if I listen to Disc 2, like I said, I stop pretty much before Overkill. I'm kind of like,
Like, disc two, until you get to this Motorhead shit, is really just about having all the B-sides.
Right, yeah.
And the Garage Revisited.
Exactly,
EP.
Yeah. Totally.
Stone Dead Forever?
Stone Dead
I could
forever.
Eat like 70,000 wet hot dogs, bro.
Oh my gosh. Dip them in water for me right now.
Like dip them in like a seltzer water.
I'm just going to dislocate my jaw and you just put them down my throat.
Oh my God.
That got kind of weird.
All right. Anyways, same bonus. Bullshit. I love the fuzz bass tone. Creepy Jason vocal on the chorus on the Stone Dead Forever line.
Sloppy James solo.
Another Sloppy James solo. Sloppy Joe. There's a drum fuck up in the solo.
Yeah.
Man, I don't really have much nice to say about it at all.
I know. Me too.
I don't have much nice to say about it at all.
Well, I know you live by that code, Papa. If you don't have nothing nice to say, don't say anything at all.
Well, never look a gift horse in the mouth, Ethan.
A gift horse.
Well, it's back when you used to trade horses for shit. You would inspect the health of the horse by looking at its teeth.
Yeah.
So if you were giving someone a horse as a gift, it was rude to look at the teeth. It's like, dude, don't fucking... I wouldn't give you an unhealthy horse. Don't fucking check that out.
Yeah, okay, I got it. Interesting. Didn't know that.
I'm here to teach you now.
Well, thanks, Papa. I appreciate them facts.
The funny thing, though, is like guy like Papa like getting confused with metaphors, like mixing them. Like,
right.
Well, you can teach a man to fish now, but if you follow or look a gift horse in the mouth, he'll swim forever.
You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him have a gift horse.
You can lead a gift horse into water, but two in the hands better than one in the bush.
Wisdom from Papa.
All right, good God. Let's go ahead and just move on to Too Late. Too Late. This is my favorite one, and this is an interesting recording. If you guys listen with cans on and in your privacy of your own home, I want to get your opinion about this too.
Yeah,
I was listening on the plane today. You hear the distorted riff.
Yeah,
you hear the amp, but you can hear the clean strings being hit. Now, does that mean they recorded it right next to the cabinet? Why are you hearing that?
I'd imagine.
And why is it only in the right speaker?
Well, then it's probably just one guitar track that they recorded that has that on there. I'd imagine even if you're right up against that cabinet, but that thing's like, probably turned up so fucking loud.
I know, but it's James's guitar, so he, and this is in the load era, so he's panned left. But before you hear Kurt come in, you can hear what he's playing clean on the right channel.
You know what it might be? It could be coming through his vocal, because this was a rehearsal.
That's what it is.
It was a rehearsal. So
that's exactly what it is.
They're not in the studio multi-tracking this, so...
Dude, you just fucking nailed it. That's exactly what it is. It's coming through his cans.
Blow your mind.
So that's called, like, bleed. So...
Yeah.
He probably had his cans up so loud that it's coming through into his vocal mic.
Right, yeah.
Or no. What's happening is the guitar is coming. So usually what you have to do is you use certain kind of directional microphones so that whatever you're playing, like some people who track acoustic guitars that way and that acoustic guitar, the way it's phased and angled, nothing you're playing down over at your belly button is coming through the vocal.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's a whole technique involved.
Yeah, and sometimes it sounds cool production-wise to have that sound of the electric strings, but you have the distorted, you know, signal from the cabinet. Yeah.
The guitars sound awesome. I think that's why I like this one the most. I think it's because it sounds the best to me.
Yeah. Again, though, the downside, like all these, is I don't love Hetfield's vocals.
No, they're just, it's not strong. It's weird.
I mean, again, maybe he was trying to do a Lemmy thing. He was kind of off the mic, and they had no intention of releasing this stuff, so he wasn't really...
That's what it seemed like.
If they were
to
like,
me.
"Hey, we're going
to
rehearse these songs, we're going to record all four, and we're going to put it out eventually. Let's do our best."
Well, and I hate to speculate about this because it is just speculation, but I think James might be a little drunk in it on these recordings.
Yeah, very possible.
I think they maybe had a late night in the studio getting ready for this Lemmy thing, and we're probably hitting the sauce.
They're like, "We need to get in Lemmy's headspace, so let's start drinking whiskey like crazy."
Right? No shit.
Yeah, I don't really know what else to.
Well, we did it.
We did it. Too late, too late.
We did it just a little bit too late.
A little bit too late. A little bit too late.
All in all, though, it's super fun. You don't have to listen to the songs you don't like. Obviously, we all know that. It's cool that we have it. I'll always take more material than less.
Of course, yeah. But it's a fun disc. You know, obviously,
it's fun.
We're way bigger fans of disc one because it's all new recordings at the time. And
you know, they sound better. It's them with that Bob Rock shit.
And it's fun to have disc two and have all those B-sides that were on CD singles, B-sides of singles, whatever. Just overall, though, when I you know, I've got it on my phone, I've got it on, you know, vinyl, whatever. Disc one's my jam.
Yeah, me too.
But I always got love for disc two, with the exception of the Motorhead songs.
It's cool. Write in and let us know what you think. What are some of your favorites? Maybe you're a big champion of the Motorhead covers.
Yeah.
It's metalofyourpodcastshow@gmail.com. Come follow us on all the socials. We're having fun over there, Twitter and Facebook. Our website is super bitchin'. We've got new t-shirts. We've got koozies. We've got buttons of our faces on it. That's metalofyourpodcast.com. Okay.
You were about to say show.
Yeah, I don't know.
Metalofyourpodcast.com.
You're about to hear the debut of a new Lunar Satan track entitled Set the Witch on Fire Again. The only way to get access to that is to go check out the old Patreon. Even if you just donate $1.
You'll get it.
You heard about the Patreon earlier. What else can we say? What else is going on?
All I'd like to say is enjoy this Lunar Satan track. I don't have much going on. I just got done with that tour. I did a session with Paul this week. And I've kind of got some downtime now, so I'm gonna start diving in a little bit more. I got to finish my record.
You were doing a reggae record.
I'm doing a reggae record. I got like a song and a half or two songs left to go. I kind of put it on hold for the last month or so because I've just been busy with stuff. And
you have to quit. You have to quit telling me that you want to write one of these songs with me, and then writing it instead with Paul fucking Moak.
Well, let's do one this week.
Okay,
I got some ideas.
Okay.
Ching 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 ching. Ching, ching.
That's one idea. Here's this other one. Goes, can it? Ching, ching, ching. I'm just fucking bursting with them.
Love it. It's a good start.
Okay. What else can we say? Oh, so we have Jim Florentine on next week. If you want to ask Jim a question on the show, go check out that Patreon. We're opening up to our patrons to ask Jim. We're just going to talk Metallica, talk about that metal show. What were his favorite guests? What were the craziest experiences he had doing it?
I would love, if he's allowed to, talk about the Axl interview.
Yeah, I think we're gonna
that is non-existent from the internet anymore.
I think we're going to talk about all that.
I hope so. It's going to be fun.
I don't know if we have anything else. Enjoy the Lunar Satan track. Let us know what you think about it. MetalofyourPodcastShow@gmail.com. Let's get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, I'm ready.
Peace.
Adios. We'll be right back.
so what would you say? Then I would say, delete that.